good to be sober, and wanted to thank Daniel for asking me to come chair the meeting. I really appreciate it. And then he sent me the email about where to go, what to wear, how to be at about 5 o'clock this afternoon. That was perfect. So I read that on my phone, and I was like, cool, all right, I got it. I haven't been feeling all that spiritual lately. I don't know if anyone else ever ran across that before. Like, I don't feel good. So I brought my big book with me in case just to get some guidance. You know, I kind of do that every once in a while when I chair a meeting. When in doubt, bring your big book with you or open that thing, and there's definitely going to be something in there that'll help people. You know, to get down to brass tacks, I grew up a real hard knocks life in a really rough part of town up by Santa Cruz called Aptos, California. If you've ever been there, it's awful. It's just awful. It's right by the beach, you know what I mean? I had to go to these Christian soccer camps growing up. I had tennis lessons, you know. I went to a private school through elementary school. Who wouldn't drink? You know what I'm saying? Like all that pressure to be good. I just had all this like this weird feeling that other people had better friends than I did. You know, like I'd go out and I'd play a little four square. I'd own that court all recess long, and then I'd go back in the room after recess and just be like, God, no one likes me as much as they like Joe over there, you know? Like, I just obsess about things like that. So I had this extremely self-centered point of view my entire life, and lucky me, it still continues today. That hasn't gone away. So, you know, growing up, you know, elementary school, junior high, loved playing sports, fit in, reasonably intelligent, did well. And then when I was about 13 years old, a friend of mine and I stole a bottle of vodka from his mom, and we went back up behind his house, and we split that thing. And I found my special purpose. You know what I mean? I just remember taking that first sip off the shot of vodka and thinking, this does not taste like what it looks like on TV. And then I finished it. You know what I mean? Then I had some more. And then I remember we drank about the same amount. I'm still friends with that guy. His name's Jonathan. He lives up in Santa Cruz still. And we drank like the same amount, you know, except for that he doesn't have those feelings of insecurity, those feelings of self-doubt that Bill Wilson describes as an indescribable loneliness. He doesn't feel that way. You know, we would drink together, and he's a heavy drinker, but basically a normal guy. I'm an alcoholic. I put any alcohol whatsoever into my system, and I crave more, and I won't stop until I get more, you know. He's not really like that. I've watched him drink throughout the years, and he's just kind of will drink a lot or drink very little. It's just odd to me. Blows my mind. I don't understand it. So, you know, we went to high school together, and I had a really tight-knit group of friends, like 5, 10, 15 of us that would always drink together, always do other things, whatever we could get our little hands on together. By the end of high school, I couldn't stand it anymore. I couldn't take it. I got to get out of here. You know, I got to get out of this Santa Cruz scene. This is driving me nuts. I can't stand the perfect weather. You know what I mean? Like the no job thing, like not having to really try for anything or work hard for anything. I got to get out of here. So I applied to a couple different colleges, and I got accepted to a couple different colleges. And I got as far away as I possibly could. I made it all the way down to UC Santa Barbara. You know, like, so I made all the way down there, and it was really weird because I swear to you, I got down there, and the same five people I had been drinking with in high school all lived in a dorm about 100 yards away. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get down there. I'm going to make all new friends. I'm going to be a new me. I'm going to start over. It's started a trend in my life that continues to this day as well about, like, having to move a lot. I got there, and my stepdad dropped me off, and I unloaded some of my boxes, and I was sitting in my room, in my new dorm room, and after about 20, 30 minutes, I was so lonely that I was like, what are you guys doing? Where are you? And I went and found them, and I went and found the same exact people I've been drinking with in high school that entire time, and I got drunk that night. And then my first year at UC Santa Barbara consisted mainly of staying up till 3, 4 in the morning, trying to study, but drinking and then maybe smoking anything I could get my hands on, and just not really being able to comprehend what was in front of me in the literature. And then waking up at about noon. No, it's like I would wake up at this weird time at like 10:30 or 11, so there's no breakfast in the cafeteria, and they're not serving lunch yet, so I'd always eat in the cafeteria alone. And it would just be this weird, like, transitional thing, and I'd walk to my class and, you know, just feel like this kind of yucky, empty, hollow feeling, and then go to a class or two, maybe not. You know what I mean? You don't have to go. There's no one really caring or taking a role. And then I'd go back to my room, and then that night around, like, 8, 9, 10, 11, I'd end up back over at their dorm, drinking, smoking, whatever I get my hands off. And this is a pattern. I get wasted 4 or 5 nights a week. And didn't work, didn't want for anything, you know? So after that first year in high school, I had this really – my high school girlfriend, she was just really ambitious. You know, she was like, I'm going to be president of the United States and all this cute stuff. And we were just like, go get them. And so Laura's so cute. So I used to call her every single night. We would talk on the phone for like an hour every single night. And then later on she told me, she was like, you know what? I could always tell when you were drinking. And I was like, how do you know that? Like, I had no idea. And she's like, it was really weird. It's like your voice would get real deep and you talk real slow. And I'm like, in hindsight, I bet she was like my Barry White voice. You know what I mean? Like, I miss you, girl. You know, like, for like an hour. So so then after that first year going to school, she was like, hey, I want to go to Europe. And I was like, oh, cool, good for you. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do here in the United States. You know, no big deal, whatever, go have fun. And she's like, well, do you want to go with me? And I'm like, absolutely, you know, I love you. So I went and I worked on some fishing barges in Alaska, and then I came home and I worked like 3 jobs, like delivering papers, working at Albertsons, working at a Hollywood Video. That was awesome. We had uniforms like tuxedos. They were bad to the bone. I wore Ben Davis's, though, because I wasn't going to conform. You know what I mean? So anyway, saved up a bunch of money, went to Europe, and went for 5 months, and we visited 17 countries. And I remember that I could buy beer anywhere I wanted, which was awesome. I remember that they had a breakfast beverage with alcohol called hard apple cider, which was incredible. And, you know, that's about all I cared about. And we went 17 countries and we took, you know, 25 rolls of film or whatever it was. And I read like 20 books. And I just remember spending a lot of time on trains and a lot of time like carrying all these bags, you know, like looking for some hostel. You know, it was just, it's about it. And then we got back to the United States and she got accepted to UCLA and Berkeley. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, good for you. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, whatever. And she's like, well, should we, you know, do we want to move in together and, like come to L.A. with me because I got a new UCLA? And I'm like, ah, yeah, absolutely, of course. Love you. So we moved in together down in Palms, and I got a job at Louise's on 26th Street, not far from where O.J. did not kill his wife, and also near very... very, very close to what is one of the most interesting AA meetings I've ever been to, is a place called the Pacific Group. So I actually used to work next to that meeting. Had no idea that was going on, though. So anyway, my life at that point consisted of going to work at this little deli, going and playing a little soccer, or going to a few classes that I deemed appropriate at the time, you know, because I'm figuring things out. And I was driving a little 1987 Honda Civic that my father had bought me. Because he got sober when I was about 15 years old and started showing back up in my life, and I hated it, you know. I was just like, he was so mopey and always wanted to talk about his feelings, and I was just like, what's this guy doing? You know, maybe he'll give me some money so I'll sit through this. And he used to just drive me nuts. However, I don't know, 7 or 8 years later, when I needed to get sober, he's the one I called, you know. So I guess it was worth it. So I was living with her, you know, and just kind of not doing much. You know what I mean? Like I figured I found John Madden football on the Sony PlayStation. I used to sit there and basically drink a 6-pack or a bottle of wine, whichever, you know, good Keani. Or just basically I'd get hammered and play football every single night, and that's all I did. And then we went to the taping of the show called Loveline, because it used to be a TV show. And so we went to a taping of that, and we sat in the studio audience, and it was awful. It was just awful. Like, they don't feed you. They don't give you water. You're in there for, like, 8 hours. You're like, You know, like you're just trapped like in the front row. And so we were sitting there, and one of the camera guys comes by, and he's like, hey, get a load of these two little lovebirds. You know, we're like sitting in one of these like seats, you know, and I was like, I'll kill him. You know, but I was still thirsty. I couldn't move. So anyway, he's just like, it panned by us. I totally forgot about that. And then a couple months later, my phone rings, and it's like 10 o'clock at night, and I pick it up, and it's my buddy Luke. And Luke's living in Chico. And I'd never been there. I didn't know anything about Chico. So over the phone, I hear Luke going, dude, you're on Loveline. Oh, my God. And I'm like, just waking up, you know. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, man, just a few friends are over. No big deal. Just hanging out. Anyway, you should come visit us sometime. And I was like, through the phone, I don't know what you guys are like, but here's the deal. If I hear something that sounds so anything like a party or anything like people are having fun, like I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, what is going on there? That must be the best party ever. Like, what are they doing? Is there a clown? You know what I mean? Like, what is happening at that party? And my imagination just goes nuts. It's still like that today. So I'm like, yeah, sure, maybe I'll come up and visit. So I drove up there and I visited him for a couple, like a weekend or something in the middle of the summer. And I get up there and basically it was like, he's like, here, have a beer, man. And I'm like, cool, you know. And I just, every house we went to, hey, good to meet you, have a beer. I can get used to this place, you know. And like, by the end of the weekend, I had all these new friends. I wasn't drinking like how I drank at home because, you know, you're in a new place. So you're kind of like, you're on guard a little bit. You're funnier. You're like cooler because they don't really know you yet. And I had a new girlfriend, you know what I mean? She didn't know, but who cared? You know what I mean? Like, Brandon knows. we had a moment or two, you know? Like, she was probably just, like, nervous, but I was like, yeah, it's on. So anyway, it's going to happen. So at the end of that weekend, I was like, Luke, I'm going to move here. And he's like, oh, man, everybody says that. And so I drove all the way back down the I-5 thinking to myself, how am I going to get rid of that wet blanket at home? She's always on me with her, I'm going to UCLA, and I'm going to succeed, and I'm going to be the president, and then, what are you doing? And I'm like, God, what a nag. You know what I mean? Like, how could she do this to me? Like, how could she treat me like this? Really? What? I've done everything for her. And so that's the way my mind works, instantaneously, and it's still like that today. I wish it weren't, but I have alcoholism, so my mind is just a strange, dark place sometimes. So, go all the way home, and I'm out on the couch within a week or two. I arrange the breakup. You know how we do it. You know, like, whatever happens, happens. And then a couple months later, conveniently, I packed up my dad's truck and showed back up in Chico with, like, all my stuff. And my buddies weren't home, so I went and unloaded everything into their living room. Because they had this huge, huge living room, and they weren't using any of it. And they come home, and they're like, what are you doing? What are you doing here? And I'm like, I know, right? Like, yeah, right? And they're like, seriously, like, because I didn't call. Because I love the element of surprise, you know? Like, I just want to sleuth in there, and just everyone's going to be like, get the, you know, wee, you know, like, let's pop-ums or whatever they're called, just let's have a party. So they're like, that was the summer, man. Like, it's the school year right now. I have a test tomorrow. We got to study. I guess you can stay on the couch or whatever. And I was just like, okay, cool. I get it. Yeah, well, summertime, whatever. And so it was amazing how fast they helped me find a place to live. So they helped me move into this place called The Zoo. And it was I heard someone's been there. Who was it? Yes! Yes! There's always one who's just like, oh! Just like thinking he's like. So The Zoo's like a city block of apartments where I don't think any of them go to school. It's just fun and mayhem constantly, right? Yeah. Whew. So anyway, I moved in there and it was just shenanigans, you know? And I was living in this place and I had all these new friends. Before I moved in, these guys were like, hey, we need to let you know that things get kind of crazy here sometimes. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I moved here, you know? They're like, I don't know if you understand. Like, it gets crazy here, man. And I'm like, I know. That's why I moved here. You know, like, let's have fun. You know, let's drink. And it got crazy, you know? And after, like, a month or so, one of those guys threatened to kill me and my family. No big deal. After a fun-filled evening together. Where we had gone to this party together, and I don't like buying alcohol when I just see it laying there, you know. So I had started gathering some, you know, beers for the night at this party. And I look over, and there's this girl that's all upset, and she's pointing at me and getting these big guys to, like, get something going on. And I'm like, hey, dude, the party's over. Let's get out of here. It's my buddy. And he was, like, started getting the whole – he was blacked out. His pupils were all big, and he was, like, wavering. He's like, I've been drinking here since before these kids were born. I was like, oh, my God, it's going to end so bad tonight. I was like, no, dude, let's go. Let's leave this party right now. And he was like – no, man, I ain't. So I'm like, whatever. And I pointed at her and I took the beers out of my pocket, set them on the ground, and like I left. Because I'm a complete coward. Like, if you want a speaker that like was, you know, in fisticuffs and all that, talk to Kip. Because he got beat up a lot. You know? So anyway, you handsome devil. Anyway, I got out of there, and then the next morning this guy, oh, man, he came in, and he still had the same clothes on from the night before. He had a big bloody footprint, like, on his chest. Like, didn't know when to say no, when, you know. And he was just like, he's like, this is your fault. And I was like, oh, goody. So that's the kind of fun I was having. You know, it's just best friends turning into, like, mortal enemies, all this fun stuff. So anyway, moved back to I shared that story one time at, like, a youth group home up in Santa Cruz. And this guy came up to me later, and he's like, why'd you bail on your friend, homie? You know what I mean? Like, he was all, like, mad at me. And I was like, I don't know, dude. I was scared. You know? This kid was, like, 13. He's like, well, why'd you leave him there, man? Where's your code of honor? And I was like, I don't have one. I'm an alcoholic scumbag. I don't have one. So, anyway, Chico shenanigans. And then some stuff happened where my grandma was in the hospital with pneumonia. So I had to go down and kind of hang out with the family, and that's some rough stuff. You know what I mean? Some real life rough stuff where someone in the family is really sick. And I showed up, and, you know, my whole family's at the hospital. My uncles are there. You know, these are like big construction guys I've been hanging out with my whole life, and they're not doing good, you know, because the matriarch of the family is down. And that was some rough stuff. So the way I handled it is I went and bought a case of beer and a big can of chew. And I went and rented Forrest Gump because it cheers me up. And I went to my cousin Laura's house, and I pounded all that beer, and I fell asleep with a big chew in my mouth. I woke up the next morning, and I was like, oh, you wake up with a huge chew, like just been sucking the life out of your head all night. And I just was like, you know, and I went back out to Chico, and I partied some more, and then some more shenanigans. And then I called my grandpa one morning after staying on my buddy Luke's couch on this porch near 5th and Ivy one night. And I called up Grandpa, and I was like, hey, how's Grandma doing? And he goes, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you like this, Sean, but Grandma died last night. And I didn't handle that well, you know, because I didn't have any alcohol in my system. I didn't have anything in me. And I don't handle information like that well sober. So I walked home, and I was in a complete state of numb shock. And I looked around the apartment where I've been living, and there's this long brown shag carpeting with glass in it, so you got to be careful. Don't walk around barefoot. Refrigerator is empty. The phone is shut off. The sink is full of dishes. My closet door is missing. Totally other story. Don't have time to tell. I was living out of cardboard boxes on a futon I've been dragging from town to town. And that was my life. And it was like a moment of clarity. And I picked up the phone. And I called my dad, who had been sober about 8 years at that point. And I just said, I don't even know what I got out. I just basically said, I need some help. And he goes, I'll be there in 2.5 hours. And he showed up. And growing up, my dad was a Vietnam vet, concrete finisher, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years. And he couldn't get sober, you know. And he was always like, hey, I wish I could have been at your soccer game, you know. And I was like, oh, don't worry about it. I love you, you know, this and that. But when I needed it, my dad showed up, and it was because of AA. And so that was the first, like, AA commercial I ever saw, was my father being acting sober. No words, just actions. So he picked me up and took me back to Grass Valley, got me a job with my uncle as a hod carrier. And I started working for him, and I was stoked. I don't know if you know what a hod carrier is, but it's like being tortured. It's the worst job in the world. It's moving bricks, block, and stone if you're lucky. It's making mortar in a wheelbarrow by hand with a hoe and a shovel. 842 is the count for sand, cement, clay. Anyway, I only did that for 3.5 years. So Like, I never got promoted. Just, like, wacky, you know. Where do you want all these bricks? So, my uncle was sober about 15 years. His wife was sober about 10 years. My dad was sober 8 years. My aunt was sober 15 or 20 years at that point. She's got over 30 years now. My stepmom does. So, you know, I was starting to surround myself with these people that were sober because I felt it, you know. They weren't telling me anything. They would say things like, what are you doing this weekend, Sean? Where have you been this weekend, Sean? Wow. You know how we are? We show up. We're like, okay, I'm good. You know, and then you like walk in, you like squirt some like something fresh smelling on you and go inside. And you're like, hey, like they don't know what we've been doing, you know. And wow, what have you been doing lately, Sean? You know, sleeping at all? Not really. So because they'd all been there. So they would just feed me and talk to me and listen to me about my little weird stories that all this, because I was telling people, you know how we are, like I got to explain stuff. Just explain it to death, you know. What happened was, and then my friend Daniel says that. I don't know if you guys know Daniel. He's awesome, but he'll be like, he'll start every little scenario with what happened was, you know. And like, I find myself doing that today to like my boss. I'm like, all right, wait, what happened was this, you know. And I'm like, starting. I'm like, it's over, you know. It's over before it begins. So I'm working for my uncle. I don't want to get sober. I go back down to Santa Barbara, and I get arrested for being drunk in public, threw up in the back of a cop car, spent the night in jail. Both things that I believe every true alcoholic should try to experience at least one time in their life. I went back up to Nevada City, and on the drive back up, I thought, you know what? Drinking is becoming a problem. I need to stop drinking. So I stopped. I just stopped. No AA, no God, none of you, just me. You know how fun that is? Just me, like, in my apartment, like, you know, like calling her, you know, like the one I had left like a year, like, hey. And she's like, what do you call me for? I don't know, you know. Awful identification laughter. That's horrible. So anyway, we miss people. You know what I mean? We got to let them know. So I was going through that whole rigmarole, and then I called up my dad one time, probably to ask him for money or something. He's like, hey, what do you want? Because I was starting to really wear him down. He's starting to get really impatient with me. And I'm like, well, maybe you could take me to one of those AA meetings. I didn't know I was going to say that. So he took me to when I picked up the phone to make the call, I didn't know I was going to ask for help. And it wasn't premeditated. So he took me to a meeting, and my stepmom came with us. Her name is Sarah. She's awesome. Afterwards, they gave me this book right here, and on the inside cover it says, Dear Sean, here's a foundation for living and a map to live your life by. Love, Dad. January 1st, 1999. And I took the book home. I thought, like, I was like, is there money in here? Like, what's, you know, like, what's the book going to do to help me? I took it home, and I read it cover to cover in 3 days, and I was like, nope. Not me. Went to a few meetings for like 3 weeks, and I got bored, you know, because like, first of all, if you're anything like me and you're newly sober in AA, I can't wait to talk. Like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but I can't wait, you know, and I'm like, eye contact, let me talk. And I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'm pretty much going to repeat what that guy just said, add a little spice of my own, and just sort of get us through the rest of the meeting. You know what I mean? Just, like, make it happen. And no experience, no strength, just hope, you know? So I went to a couple meetings. The meetings were killing me. You know, people were looking right at me. Oh, you're so young, and oh, you can get sober. You know, and I've had people say that recently, or not recently, like the last, you know, whatever. I got sober when I was 22, so they're like, oh, wow, you got sober when you were really young. And I'm like, yeah, it sucked. Like, I'm not kidding. Growing up in your 20s, being sober for me, it's you're feeling everything. You know what I'm saying? You're, like, fully aware of the resentments and the fear. Whereas before, it was like, pound it. Let's get out of here, you know? So not a big fan of getting sober young, but I do what it takes to stay sober. And, you know, I'm not saying my life isn't phenomenal today, but it wasn't peaches and cream the entire time, you know? So I went to a few meetings. I stopped going because I'm bored, because I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't do any steps. I definitely didn't try to help anybody. And you know, I had things to do. I had to go home and sit around and think about myself. You know, I didn't even have a TV. I would just sit there and be like, you just plans and designs, you know, all these like grandiose plans with nothing to back them up. Within 2 weeks, I was sitting at a bar talking to my new friend Gideon. And Gideon was a clamper, and he had just gotten out of Susanville. And I was drinking. I was controlling and enjoying my drinking. I had a Calistoga. So I'm like, I'm not drinking. You know? And you know how we get all, like, relaxed? You know what I mean? We're just like, and he's like, hey, Sean, why don't you have a beer with us and relax? And I'm like, I am relaxed, Gideon. You know, like, just everything bothers me. Like, oh, God, the way you tie your shoes, and, like, you walk too slow, and, like, the tone of your voice, and, like, and he's like, dude, why don't you just chill out for a minute and have a beer with us? And I'm like, no. And so I start explaining AA to him. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to AA, and da-da-da, my mom's got cancer, and my dad's in AA, and, you know, I left this girl, but I keep calling. And he's like, oh, my God. And he's like, check this out. I just had this beer pulled. Why don't you taste it? And he slid the beer across the bar to me. And it talks about that twice in Bill's story. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, full beer. It's too full, you know. And I'm like, and it's like the two-handed sipper kind, you know. He goes, why don't you taste it? And I go, okay. And I tasted it, and it was awful. It's called like Bastard Ale or Your Old Bastard or something like that. I tasted it, too much alcohol, it was awful, and so I finished it, you know? Because I have this thing called the phenomenon of craving. It's talked about in the doctor's opinion of the big book. When I start drinking, I cannot stop. So that night, what happened for me was this. My life sucks, you know? I'm too young to try this AA thing. I can't seem to find anything besides minimum wage work. All my friends are going to good schools and graduating and moving on and getting married and all this fun stuff. What's wrong with me? My mom's got cancer. I can't help her. I miss my ex-girlfriend so bad, and I'm the one that left her. All these chattering. This is like 10% of what's going on in my head, just always, you know? So I drink this beer, and I'm like, God damn, it's on, you know? Like, why did I stop drinking? It's like, what's Red Bull? Like, let's do this, you know? Gideon, I'm going to buy you a beer. And then... it's like in the next room, I think it might be AC/DC playing in there, you know, like, let's go find out. And then it's just like moshing with these guys, and it turns into like just shenanigans, just fun. You know how it is, 3 o'clock in the morning, hitting golf balls at the freeway or break the snowboard out. I don't know. I'm Sean, maybe Sean White. And then I'm just like in the parking lot with the snowboard at 3 in the morning, just all this fun stuff. You know how we are, fun. And, sure those neighbors loved us. And then, just after about 2 weeks of this, like on the weekends mostly, all this fun drinking on the weekends, I'm standing there one night, and there's 7 or 8, 9, 10 guys in this apartment I'm living in. We invited girls over, but it's the kind of thing where like they'd be like, they'd look in and be like, uh-uh. You know? Like, yeah, that's a good idea that you leave. So anyway, here, let me paint a picture. It was like Jackass on acid. It was like... Gideon, for fun, is pouring bleach in his eye. You know, his best friend, his roommate, who they didn't have any furniture besides sleeping bags, is on the ground, passed out, and someone is just taking it to him. You know what I mean? Just to make sure he can't wake up. On the arm, no big deal. Above the sleeve, you can't see the bruises. So then someone else has got a speaker in his ear, like an amp, and they're just going for it. You know what I mean? And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, it's fun, right? It's a fun environment. And I got the beer right here, and I had been drinking all night long, and I could not shut it up. I could not make it stop. And I sat there, and I started thinking to myself, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic. I am exactly what the big book describes as a real alcoholic. I have the phenomenon of craving. I cannot stop doing this. And I had this moment of clarity, and I was trying to drink it away, and I couldn't. So the party ended, and the next day... I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I met this guy named Jimmy, and I had known Jimmy before, and Jimmy was awesome, and he still is awesome, you know? Celeste and I went up there and visited my parents about 2 months ago, and Jimmy met us at a meeting, and the guy is just, he's from New York. He's like 5'7 on a good day, you know? And he's just got this different perspective of life. He's always on Facebook putting this stuff about how he loves his wife, and he's putting all this stuff on, like funny, neat stuff, you know? And that guy became my first sponsor, you know. And it happened like this. I was just standing there sort of talking to Jimmy, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And Jimmy was, like, telling me about his son who was dying of heroin addiction and alcoholism in Seattle because his son wouldn't listen to anything Jimmy said. And I'm like, I relate to that, you know. And Jimmy told me, he goes, you know, I'm doing the only thing I can. I'm here looking to try to help somebody. And Jimmy basically explained the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous to me the first time I ever met him. And he would make me laugh so hard. He would tell me that, like, they used to play in the craziest rock bands in New York, right? Like, right before punk rock started. So he'd tell me all these, like, club names. I had no idea what they were. And he goes, well, what we would do is we would, like, go to someone's house after a show, and we'd get really, really stoned. And then if we didn't like the people whose house it was, we would eat everything in their refrigerator. And I was like, yes! You know, like, that's revenge right there. That's sweet. I can buy into that, you know. So, like, I really enjoyed his company. And our phone calls, they would basically go like this. Jimmy, hey, Sean, what's up? Okay, happened again today. Went into the coffee shop, and she was in there. I'm in love, you know. It's her. She's the one. Cool. What's her name? I don't know that. You know what I mean? But she's beautiful, and it's like it's on, you know. And he'd be like, "Oh man, I'm the same way," you know. And I'm like, "Really?" And it wasn't like, "Oh, you're a weirdo. That's strange," or any of that kind of stuff. He'd be like, "Dude, I totally know what you're talking about. Did you talk to her?" No, that's crazy. I can never do that, you know. And it was just on through, like, bumbling and stumbling through the steps. After a couple months, and maybe after a month or two, we're sitting in, he refuses to drive a normal car. He still drives these enormous Lincolns, like late 70 model, split pea green Lincoln, like 22-foot long car. And so we're sitting in the car one day, and it's like from me to the interpreter, Jimmy's over there, you know what I mean? And I'm like, we're in front of the meeting, and I'm like, so Jimmy, are you my sponsor or what? You know, I was all embarrassed. It was like I'm gonna like kiss a girl or something. I was like, so are you my sponsor or what, dude? And he's like, same reaction. He's like, I don't know. You know, like you haven't asked me to sponsor you yet. You know, like we're all coy. So I was like, well, will you be my sponsor? He's like, yeah, I'll be your sponsor, man. So, that's how it started. And bumbled and stumbled through the steps. I'm sure we did them wrong. We'd sit there and he'd be like, okay, what's the second step? And I'd be like, I don't know, man. I'd look at him and he'd be like, no, leave the book closed. What is it? I'm like, I don't know. And so he would tell me stories about how he had been sober in AA for 5 years and thought he had AA figured out. And he stopped going to meetings. So he stopped going to meetings and then he stopped praying. He told me he never stopped praying. He goes, you know what? When I would do my prayers, instead of saying, thy will be done, I would say, my will be done. Because that's what I really want. That's what we really want anyway, right? Who cares about what God's will is? Like, let's get some juice, God, and let's do my will. And he goes, and I got drunk, man. I got drunk. And when Jimmy started sponsoring me, he had a year sober. And I wasn't like, oh, let me see your pedigree of AA, you know. I was like, I trusted the guy, and that was all it took. And I really didn't trust many other people. So I went through the steps. I did a 4-step, wrote out these 3 columns, because that's what the picture in the big book said to do. And I call him, I'm like, hey, Jimmy, I'm done with my 4-step. And he's like, cool, what'd you do? And I'm like, well, you know, on that page, I wrote the columns. And he goes, did you write, like, maybe a 4th column or something? I'm like, no, there's a picture. I got it. Dude, I'm good. You know, and he goes, turn to 2 pages later. Read what it says to me. And I'm like, well, it says, you know, where had we been wrong? Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. Blah, blah, blah. So, I was like, okay. So I wrote that stuff down, and then I hunted him down. He wasn't like, come read your 5th step to me. No, I don't want to. I was like, I knew I was going to get drunk if I didn't read that 5th step to Jimmy. So I went and found him, read this thing to him, and at the end of it, he goes, not bad. Leave anything off? And I'm, dude, of course we do. You know, like, it's that weird stuff that, like, you don't want to tell anybody because it's just strange, you know? And I was like, you know, just maybe, you know, kind of like some silence. And he goes, well, was it this? And he guessed my deepest, darkest secret, like, in detail. And I was like, wow. Yeah, that's it. And he goes, everybody's done that. You got anything else? And I was like, wow. A little disclaimer. I've tried that before. Apparently no one else has done that stuff besides me and Jimmy. not normal. So, anywho, it lowered the sense of difference between between Jimmy and myself enough to where I was able to move on with the steps. Another disclaimer, I thought the fear inventory and the sex inventory were bonus questions, so I didn't do them. It's like, get on that later. And my life reflected that. So ended up leaving Grass Valley, going back to a very prestigious college, a place where I knew I could succeed and make new friends, and it was perfectly safe. Went back to Chico State and got a degree there. And turns out Chico's pretty incredible if you're not sitting in a dark room drinking the entire time. There's a lot of stuff to do outdoors, a lot of really nice people, a lot of really cool stuff to see. Tons of trees. Who knew? I think I tried to climb one when I was drunk once. But anyways, gorgeous town. So got a degree, moved to Sacramento, got a new sponsor when I was living in Chico. Total big book guy. I got him on accident because when I moved to Chico from Grass Valley, I had there was enough separation where I never saw anyone that I got sober with anymore, and I was about 3 years sober. And here's what I'm like. I don't know what you guys are like, but here's what I'm like. Go to a meeting, bunch of new people. They go, hi, how are you? I haven't seen you here before. What's your name? I'm Sean. And they go, oh, cool. How long have you been sober? And I go, about 3 years. They go, oh, okay, cool. And what I thought I heard was, oh, then you got it figured out and you don't need my help. So I started building a wall between you and me. And I spent a lot of time sitting around by myself thinking about myself. And I got to probably the closest I've ever been to drinking during that time. And I kept running into these guys that were just like big books under their arms. So dorks. You know what I mean? Just like, ugh. Always like stoked about life though. So it's very confusing, you know? And one of them is this guy who wore a lot of leather, a bunch of tats, these crazy teeth, like two rows of teeth. We used to joke about it all. It's like a carny, and he would just had all these weird like tricks he would play on you. He had like half a pinky. Like, I don't know. Anyway, and then there's this other guy, Nate, and Nate was just happy-go-lucky, you know, sweat a lot, short round bald, you know, just like, and I was just like, what's up with those guys, you know? And then so to shorten it up, Nate became my sponsor because they invited me to someone's house one night to study the big book, and I was like, oh, that sounds really exciting, you know? It's like, it's a Friday night, I can't wait. So I took this other guy with me who was just like me, just miserable, you know, been sober a couple years, was stuck on step three, just like, you know, couldn't work, was sleeping on people's couches, and I was like, I relate to all of it. So we go to their house, and they sit me down, and they're like, dude, what are you doing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I started doing little outside-of-the-neck cliches about AA, and they're like, shut up. You know, you don't need to feed us that garbage anymore. Where did you hear that? At an AA meeting. Well, did it come out of the big book? I don't know. Well, did you know that if it didn't come out of the big book, it's not really AA? And I started to get kind of like, huh. No, I didn't know that. And so they're like, do you want what we have? Yeah. Are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? Yeah, I am. And I felt something. Felt something happen. I think it was a spiritual shift. As soon as I agreed to go to any lengths, it's almost like 20 extra watts were going through the light bulb in that kitchen. You know, so I felt like something happened. And I basically was just like, huh, okay, what do I got to do? And they outlined a program of action, which they had followed, which included go to a meeting every day, call your sponsor every day. By the way, so the guy that was convincing me was this guy, Tom, and nuts. And so he will admit that himself. Anyway, so he's like, Nate's going to be your sponsor because I've taught him everything I know about this book. So he's going to help you. And I got it. I got AA again. It's one of those aha moments where I was like, he's helping Nate by Nate helping me. I just understood. So meeting every day, call your sponsor every day. If someone says it that it says it in the book, we want you to go ask them where after the meeting's over. So I started doing that, like for fun. Just like, hey, dude, you mentioned it says in the big book. Would you mind showing me? And we had so much fun with that. Oh my God. It was just, it's really exciting. You know, no one really gets hurt, but like some people get like way wacky when you ask them to show you where it is. All it did was help me learn what's in this book. And I felt different. I felt amazing. Within 2 weeks, I was sponsoring my first sponsee because I was going and looking for sponsees. In the big book, it talks about we approach. We search out a candidate, a prospect, right? And I was just doing that. I was like, hey, dude, you're newly sober. Do you want to go through the steps? Do you want to have a spiritual experience? Yeah. Really? Oops. I gotta get back to you. I don't know what to do next. No. And then so like, Nate, what do I do? You know, well, dude, what do with you? We sit around and we read the big book. There you go, pal. And so I started sponsoring guys. I sponsored this guy, John. John was really interesting. He was my first sponsee. We got in an argument during his fifth step about whether or not he had to make an amends to this entity for doing something. And I told him he needed to make an amends. He argued with me. He got drunk. I stayed sober. I'm not bragging. I'm just, my experience has been, you know, this type of thing. I actually ran into him in Carmel like 2 years ago. So there's about a 8-year gap from when he got drunk and moved to where I ran into him again. And you should see the look on that guy's face when I walked into the AA meeting. He was like, it was so weird. Something spiritual goes on in this world, you guys. Something spiritual happens that we can't explain at all times. So I moved from Chico to Sacramento, Sacramento to Santa Cruz, you know, living life, you know, got involved in a AA relationship that both of us, I think, thought this is it. You know, after a couple of years, it wasn't it. And so, let's see, in a matter of 6 months, I lost the highest paying job I'd ever had. Relationship ended. She moved back to North Bay Area. And then I moved back in with my parents when I was 10 years sober. That was awesome. It was like I spent a lot of time sitting around thinking about myself, telling people I'm asking God for direction, but like not doing anything about it. At 10 years sober, I went through a very deep depression where, I mean, literally sleeping until noon, get up. You give me one of the signs or what? Bring it on, dude. I wait for the sign. Okay, cool. I'm stoked about the sign. You're like so enthusiastic. He's like, so, totally dark depression, staying up late playing a little Tiger Woo, talking to people on Facebook, you know, just not doing anything, you know, going to a few meetings here or there. And then got a job again, that job down in Carmel. And I had this home group down up in the Bay Area called the Second Tradition Group. It was every Saturday night, and it was like 300 or 400 people every week. And so I stayed involved with that meeting at all times. And the format of that meeting was modeled very similar to the Pacific Group. And my sponsor, Jeff, lived up there at the time. Jeff now lives in Tehachapi. He used to live in La Mesa. So anyway, he said I had to say his name 3 times tonight. So I love that guy, Jeff. Okay, there we go. Done. Jeff's been sponsoring me for about 7 or 8 years, saw me through this whole time. I think my saving grace is I was always honest with him about what I was doing. And what I was doing was practicing my character defects that I had asked to be removed in steps 6 and 7. In a general way, that means doing things that I wasn't even doing when I was drinking. And I'll just leave it at that. And so that led me to a lot of darkness, a lot of time sitting around thinking about myself. So, you know, got another job down at Carmel. That ended. Got another job up in the peninsula. That was kind of, you know, just wasn't quite working out. Decided to change careers, completely change careers. And after a lot of writing and soul searching, figured out that the only thing from stopping me from this career change was fear. It's usually the way it is. So I got hired by this new company, moved to San Diego, April of 2012. I lived with my uncle for 6 months up in Carlsbad. And then I just moved to North Park about a year ago. And I've been living in North Park, working at a lot of the hospitals in the area, and trying to do as much AA as possible, and meeting as many people as possible, and going to meetings like this. Going to meetings where when you go into the room, there's some sort of buzz and some sort of chatter, and you could feel something spiritual happening. Because I prefer ye old candlelight meeting where there's 3 of us, and there's like some philosophy going on. You know what I mean? 5 minutes. I got tons of time. So I've rushed through like 14 years. I'm pretty sure that God has a plan for me and everyone else in this room. that is way beyond what I can conceive or what anyone else can conceive. I'm also pretty sure that it's up to me to try to align myself with God's will. And one of my favorite speakers, this guy Mike S. from Riverside, said it like this one time. He said, you know the difference between my will and God's will? He goes, when it's my idea, it's my will. And that was the most disappointing thing I'd ever heard in my entire life, because I come up with a lot of really good ideas. And it also makes me think that when other people are talking to me or suggesting things to me, that it's probably more along the lines of God's will. And that is the most frustrating thing ever. However, the beginning of this year, my New Year's resolution was to try to remain humble. Of course, not constantly, but to give it a shot and to try, you know, because that's my thing, you know. I work someplace for 2 weeks at an entry-level position, and I'm like, God, this place would collapse if I left, you know. Like, I don't know, Kip knows what I'm talking about. It's like they just don't get it, you know what I mean? I'm not a big fan of working, you know. Like, I'd much rather just kind of, like, get stuff because of the great ideas that I have going on up here, you know. However, I find that when I get out of the house, when I go, when I try to be of service, when I try to help people, things happen better than I could have planned it. The way things are today, what it's like now is that I have a job I fought for and tried to get, and it's like the hardest career change I could possibly think of. And it's a high-level sales position that I got it, and then now I'm like, uh-oh, I got it, you know. And I have gotten myself into the exact situation I'm into, which is it's perfect. You know, like I have the best life, my life, better than all you guys. No, just kidding. I look at it, I'm even taller. Like, I love this little teeny podium thing, this little step that I'm on. You're done. So here's the last 24 hours for me. I stayed at my girlfriend's house last night. She writes me little love notes every morning. So when I get up, there's like these little love notes from her, you know, and sometimes I write them back. But anyway, I collect these and I stick them all in a drawer at home. And then I went to work at 7 a.m. And I worked with people that really know what they're doing, you know. And I sit there all day and I'm like, oh man, I hope no one asks me a question, you know, because like I have this thing where I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like I've been trained and I've experienced and I'm like, don't look, no eye contact, because like, and then halfway through the day, I'm like, they're snubbing me. They're not even asking me questions. You know what I mean? Like, I just have this, like, reaction that goes inside that's so frustrating, you know? And so it's so calming for me to know that there's other people in AA that have the same kind of mind. The only thing that used to calm that down was a drink. Now the only thing that calms that down is intensive work with other alcoholics. So thanks a lot for letting me share. Thank you.